You're listening to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. This program is broadcast on 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. And you can go to that website to find out about all of the interesting things which are done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, as well as hearing archives of Humanities Connection. The United States fought World War II on two fronts, as we all know. One was in Europe, one was in the Pacific. But what's not talked about very often is what was going on at home. You didn't have to be in the military to be really doing something for your country and doing something for the war effort. We all know about Rosie the Riveter, but there are other stories, too, which are very interesting. And we're talking about one of those right here in this segment of Humanities Connection. One of the grants that was given this past year by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities was to the Naval Air Station Wildwood Aviation Museum. The idea was to recreate a smaller version of a World War II-era spotter tower and tell the story of the women, elderly, and children who volunteered as plane spotters. And joining us on the phone from the Wildwood Aviation Museum is its chairman and founder, Dr. Joseph Salvatore. And Dr. Salvatore, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program and talk about this wonderful project.
Well, we're honored to be here and tell the story that happened here in World War II.
Now, I know because I've gone out to Montauk on the edge of Long Island and seen machine gun nests, and there were stories about things which happened off of La Valette. German subs definitely got close. There was a reason to be concerned about Nazi presence on the Atlantic coast here in the New Jersey, New York area. But talk a little bit about this spotter tower. What was it designed for? What was the strategic reason why there was a spotter tower up in your area down there on the Jersey coast?
Well, what happened in World War II, people were frightened that airplanes from foreign nations would come and harm us here on the East Coast and West Coast. So 100,000 people in the East Coast and a total of 1 million volunteers volunteered to be part of the Aircraft Warning Service, which was really part of the Air Force at that time. They were composed of older men, women, kids, that would give 4 hours of their time standing in a tower in the heat and the cold with a telephone to report and record airplanes that were flying by. They were given silhouettes of airplanes to learn their shape and size and sounds. And they were also required to document each one of these flights, which we have documents in our possession now recording all this.
Did they ever spot any Nazi planes? Did anyone ever come close? Or were they mainly ending up logging commercial flights or flights that were going to a U.S. air base here at home?
From my information, they never, ever were able to document a foreign airplane approaching our shores.
But what a great system in case there had been. I mean, think of the horrors of Pearl Harbor and how I remember being at Pearl Harbor and just how many parts of the exhibit there are stories, you know, reminding people of, you know, we possibly could have had a warning system. We could have had a better warning system. We could have prepared. And then, you know, this tremendous tragedy that happened that got us into the war.
Right.
It's great that it existed.
Right. Mr. Mann, the value of this was not, in my mind, spotting airplanes. It was getting the community together, people, fathers, mothers, and kids, to volunteer to this patriotic effort. So there was more to it, and I think even more from the humanity standpoint, that these people gave their time during a time when it was very difficult for the United States to be involved in a war. These people gave their time, and it was a very patriotic thing.
And they really were a part of the war effort, and I guess they would, Dr. Salvatore, have become a community unto themselves, too, like, you know, knowing There's Joe, and, you know, he does the 10 to 2 shift, and he's doing the exact same thing for the country and for the war effort that I'm doing.
Absolutely. And they had meetings and volunteer time, and they discussed the war effort and what they could do. So it was more than just spotting airplanes. It was a community effort to come together, to be a patriotic group, to be part of the whole nation in the war effort. So it was more than just spotting airplanes.
Absolutely. And it was a very diverse group of Americans, too. Here in the introduction that I read from the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, they speak about women, older people, children even volunteering as plane spotters. A real cross-section, not just men, because obviously so many of the men were involved in other aspects at the time of the war effort.
You're absolutely right, and we have people that were part of it that come and tell us about it. In fact, Mr. Mann, we found on Route 9 near the airport a road called Tower View Road, and it was exactly the site of a tower. And that's a tower that we have reproduced here in the museum thanks to the Council for the Humanities.
That's great. And it was a grant of over $7,000. And how did you do it to scale? For example, approximately, I'm not looking for the blueprints, but how big was the original tower? How big is the replication that you've made to fit into your wonderful museum?
Well, we have a picture of the inauguration of that tower. So we were able to, not super accurately, but accurately reproduce it at about one-third the size. So that people, you know, we're in a museum and it's inside, so we couldn't go the 50 feet that it was originally. And we were able to put a sign on the highway, too, indicating that was the site of the tower. So we really feel that we have, the community knows now what was at that location.
Can people actually go in the smaller tower into the replica? Can they go in and stand, or are you looking at it from the outside? How is it set up as an exhibit?
Well, it's on four legs, just like the original. And being one-third the size, we really can't have people climb up into the tower itself. But underneath, we have graphics that depict all of the history, what it was, and where it was located, and pictures of the original site. And what has captured the imagination of our visitors is that from newspaper clippings, we found the names of the people who volunteered. And it is so exciting for people to come up and say, oh, that was my grandma, that was my great uncle, this was my father's sister. So it in addition to the exhibit itself, it brings people together knowing that their relatives were part of it.
That is truly great. I remember taking the opportunity when I was in Washington, D.C., my father was in the Seabees in World War II, to actually get his name listed. There were so many people who served the USA in that war that they can't put their names on all of the plaques, but you are in a registry and you can go to a computer kiosk and see it. There's a certain element of pride. I mean, I was born long after the war was over, but there was, a real sense of pride for me to feel that connection. So that's another important connection of community and history that you've got down there.
In addition to the pride, we found when we have people's names on things, and current names and in the past, they feel a sense of ownership. So when they come in, they tell everybody, you know, here's my name, here's my father's name. We lost 42 men training here at Naval Air Station during World War II.
They were learning how to dive bomb, right? That was what they were doing at the time.
Yes, and it was really a dangerous thing. They don't do it anymore. Now they use missiles. But dive bombing was a very dangerous thing. People would forget to pull out of their dives. The airplanes were not perfect at that time. And early in the war, the airplanes had to go through 5 revisions before they were really a safe airplane because there were no computers. Everything was slide rule and just by vision. So it was a tough time.
But
there were 129 crashes here at this airport.
Tell us about the Aviation Museum. You're the chairman and the founder. Now, here in New York City, I know that a lot of people here in the North Jersey area, a lot go down to Cape May County, down to the Wildwood area in the summertime. Even though this initial broadcast is in February, we'll probably be repeating this over the course of the summer. So tell us, in general, beyond the tower exhibit, about the Naval Air Station Wildwood Aviation Museum.
Well, our museum is housed in a World War II aircraft hangar. It is the largest all-wooden building east of the Mississippi, so you can imagine how big it is inside. So that when you come in, you get the real sense of World War II, and obviously we promote that sense by having certain exhibits such as Tower. We have the Norden bomb site. We have a copy of the Enigma machine. We have 26 airplanes, many from World War II.
Wait, you have a copy of the Enigma machine that was in the Benedict Cumberbatch movie? Is that...
Yes. Now,
wow, that really is an early computer, very sophisticated.
Right, exactly. And we are just... When you commit, and we have Bader Field, Atlantic City's control tower in our hangar. It was a World War II control tower, and we have it fixed up so people can go in it, speak to other airplanes in the hangar, and pictures taken in it. And it's really an experience for the people to come here.
One of the things that we're losing in connection to World War II is that obviously so many veterans are now passing away. Simply
1,000 a day.
You would have to be, even if you were 16 years old and you went in 1944, you'd be somewhere around 90 years old right now.
Right.
How much do we lose by losing that firsthand connection to this monumental time in American history?
Well, obviously we lose a lot. What our goal and our mission here is to make sure that the memory of World War II and the effort that was expended by the United States to keep us safe is preserved. And the other thing that we're preserving is this hangar, this aircraft hangar, which is a real treasure. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. And we have received $6 million in grants to keep this place restored. Windows, there are 4,400 window panes in this hangar. Can you believe that?
It seems like real living history, and to get the feel of all of it is amazing. We only have a minute left, and so I'd like to know, Dr. Salvatore, what this has meant to you, this project, which obviously you initiated, this aviation museum at the Naval Air Station. What does it and has it meant to you?
Well, it has produced a different feeling for people who come in here. We're mainly strictly history here. But this exhibit brought another angle to the people's experience that come here. They see local people participating in a project that not only was patriotic, but it brought them together. People were able to speak of the history and the war and be part of a community that brought people together for patriotic reasons.
The New Jersey Council for the Humanities has given funding to the Naval Air Station Wildwood Aviation Museum to recreate a smaller version of a World War II era spotter tower and, as Dr. Salvatore has just said, tell the story of the people who volunteered as plane spotters and what that has meant to the community and to their families. Joseph Salvatore, the chairman and founder of the Aviation Museum. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you very much for listening. This program is initially broadcast on WFDU 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. You can go to that website not only to hear archives of our program, but to hear about all of the fascinating programs that are being run throughout the state by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.